Hello and welcome to Infernal Dominion, India's only extreme metal radio show. And today we have a very special feature as I have the incredible Dodecahedron from Netherlands doing an exclusive interview, especially for Infernal Dominion. So it's a pleasure to have you guys on here on the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're doing fine, thank you.
Excellent. And how is the band going these days?
We're doing pretty well, I think. So we sold out the vinyl in just 1 week, and the responses have been great thus far. And I think the everybody knows the name, so everybody has a record around here, and it's going good.
That sounds excellent. Anything a band needs, like. And well, the first time I stumbled upon your band was during early January this year through Facebook, and that was a few days prior to the release of your groundbreaking debut, and I was instantly impressed with the samples available online. Upon subsequent listens of the entire album over the course of 3 months, I have developed a massive fondness and appreciation for the album, and hence decided to do this conversation. So how satisfied have you been after the release of the album, both creatively and as far as the press and the sales are concerned?
Well, everything's really good. It turned out pretty much exactly the way we wanted.
Okay.
It cost a lot of time because we've been doing all this stuff ourselves, you know, writing the music and writing the lyrics and the artwork and the graphic design, mixing and mastering. And we've been working on it for, I started to write for this project almost 5 years ago.
All right.
It's been a very intensive period of trying to get to, you know, hear what I heard in my head. So and then I was collaborating with yours on the mix and all that kind of stuff, and it was a very hard search because I have very specific ideas of how things should sound.
Right.
But we just, you know, we continued to search until we were satisfied, and we managed to deliver within the period of time that we agreed on with Season of Mist. So, and you know, as far as the press and the responses and stuff are just awesome. You know, we get such good reviews, and it's really rewarding to read all these awesome responses to what we've been doing.
Yeah, I guess we were into like having total control of our art or product, whatever you want to call it, and that's one of the main thrives for us as a five piece to exactly do what we want to do. So when you start to collaborate with a bigger label like Season of Mist, you have to press through the way you want things, and you know, be stubborn and be difficult in a way. But as a result, the product sounds and looks and exactly like we want it to look. So I think we knew we had something good going on, but the responses were overwhelming because we got picked up at Season of Mist. It was really easy, and then. And all the reviews came in, and it's 90 out of 100, et cetera, et cetera. And they kept on coming. I was like, what the hell is this? but we took a lot of energy. It took a lot of energy out of it, out of us, but we put it in the band. So it's kind of, you know, it's an equilibrium. It's coming back now to us. So that's really cool.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you said that you have spent the last 5 years writing the music, recording it yourself. So after this extremely meticulous and cumbersome process, it's definitely great to have such responses, as you were telling me. And especially being signed by a label like Season of Mist for a very first album is definitely a big feather in your cap.
Yeah, definitely. Because we haven't actually, we just put out two tracks on the internet under the name of Order of the Source Below, and we even didn't make any hard copy, just the tracks on the internet, and it was enough to get picked up by Season of Mist, which is, yeah, it's really cool.
Exactly, and that's a great thing. So I think that you guys are definitely very satisfied with all the toil you have done since the past half decade.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
That's great. I mean, I think that this is what an artist really wants. you, if you have done something good, you definitely need appreciation so that you can move on and pave way for much bigger things in the future.
Yeah, yeah, but it's that on the other hand, because we solely exist for you know, being who we are and putting it out there. But even if the reviews weren't that great, and we still would be doing this kind of stuff, of course.
Yeah, so, depends on what kind of band it is. You know, in some other situations, you could imagine that you have to make some compromises here and there in order to reach your goals. But in this situation, we are and will remain very fundamental about that. It's just exactly what we want to do.
Yeah,
that's great. We
don't want to be in the charts or anything like that on the radio. You know, you know the normal music style. But we just want to put that thing out of there, and the responses were great, so it's a win-win for us, actually.
Yes,
of course, I completely agree with you, and I respect the fact that you have your fundamentals clear, because this is the thing which is lacking in the so-called scene of today, where it's very difficult to find bands who actually have a conviction and they really want to fulfill their creative energies through, say, a musical or an artistic output. I think you would agree with that.
Yeah,
definitely. Because, you know, with extreme music and there are all these sub-genres going on and everybody tells each other what to do and what the orthodox rules are and shit like that.
Right.
You know, being an artist is about, you know, freedom and doing exactly what you want to do without compromise and then giving everybody the finger in kind of a punk way. We exactly do what we want to do, whatever everybody tells us. So that's what we're about, actually.
That's great. And we'll touch this topic further in the interview. So moving on. Now, the most persuasive feature of your aesthetic is the display of those harrowingly dark sonic alchemies, which weave a maze of mind-altering visions. And they're bizarre and otherworldly. And when you had conceived the project with the name of Order from the Source Below, about which we just talked, the biography claimed that the music was a possible threat to the foundations of black metal. Now, this statement is bound to create buzz and raise eyebrows. And, you know, people would be curious to see, what the hell? I mean, what kind of a statement is this? But if a person genuinely listens to the music and tries to understand the core fundamentals, then he would understand that this statement makes a lot of sense indeed. And just as how we spoke, that in today's world of copycats and people following the orthodox mentality of this particular rule of black metal, death metal, only a very few people are able to go beyond the established conventions. So what was the instinctive drive which compelled you to envision a project like this? And we just talked that you are definitely satisfied, but I want to know about the visions which compelled you to make this.
Well, I started writing for this when I broke up with my old band. It was already moving a little bit into a darker atmosphere, and I wanted to try to make... the idea was to create music that was basically rooted in the black metal style music.
All right.
I was experimenting with the atmospheric layers because I hate the kind of symphonic vibe with strings and stuff. I tried to create some stuff with strings and do it in a different way. Just sound like shit. And I was like, we need to find another solution. And for a long time, I didn't have that until I met Joris, the other guitar player. And he is a brilliant electronic composer. And I was not aware of that whole world of sound synthesis and stuff. So when he showed me some stuff that he does, I was completely blown away by what you can do with sound synthesis if you have a person who is capable of programming that stuff himself. So, you know, all the atmospheric layers and stuff, all the sound stuff that you hear on the album, it's there are no samples, you know, it's all created. From scratch, from nothing, you know. And then I was like, so this is my solution, because here we can use these atmospheric layers in a new way, which will sort of automatically create a new little niche that will separate us from other bands. Because up until now, I haven't heard a band who was doing that with sound synthesis in this style.
Yeah, so, me neither.
That was sort of the breakthrough when I was like, okay, So the approach slightly changed, and I had to throw some old stuff away and started writing with this new thing in mind. And that's when things really started rolling. And that was basically my vision, you know, try to create. Oh, and I have to add to that, of course. to me, you know, it's extreme music and it should be aggressive.
Yes.
And and it was a sort of an artistic search to make as, you know, like nasty, dismal music as possible. It should, you know, you shouldn't really enjoy listening it rather than, you know, so like if it turns your stomach upside down, then that's good.
I agree with that. And I think these are the qualities which actually appealed me into the band, because as a listener and as a reviewer, I always look for sounds which are definitely beyond the established norms. And I usually am in a hunt for sounds which are dismal. Like how you said that if you listen to a band and if it's able to churn your stomach upside down, then there we go. Bang. That band rules. So this is this quality which really appealed me. And prior to your band, I think not many bands have experimented in this style. I think listening to Deathspell Omega or perhaps Bluetooth Nord might give you such visions, but not a whole lot of black metal bands.
No, that's what I figured. And that's why I was like, I can do, you know, because of course there are some links to Deathspell Omega and I really like what they do.
Right.
But there's no point in just copying that.
Copying it, you know? Exactly.
Even though it would be cool, you have to find your own way of expressing yourself and distancing yourself from the rest. So I think, yeah, you know, we managed pretty well.
I think you did. And since you mentioned that you were not definitely intending on copying any other bands, like what Deathspell Omega have already done, but I think there is an irony that many of the people in the press and the reviews, which I come generally, they are constantly comparing Dodecahedron with Deathspell Omega, which I find funny in a sense, because I don't find similarities.
Yes, because that's true. And the whole atmosphere of Deathspell is you know, about the occult, and it's really nasty in a way.
It is.
And we come from a different school, actually, because we want to make intense music. And we want to make your stomach turn and have this nasty gut feeling. And some of the ways, Deathspell has that too, but the way of composing
that's
has
different.
Actually nothing to do with the way we work.
Exactly.
The way Michel composes his music and writes his riffs, there are it's a whole other ball game actually than the way Deathspell does that. But we all love Deathspell nonetheless. But I you know that's a typical thing of the press and labels. They have to
categorize
and put you in a genre because it sells in a way and people can relate to something like that.
Exactly.
So it's quite of an honor to be called the new Deathspell or whatever. But if you listen closely, and I think you have, we're definitely from a different school.
That is what I mean. This is why I raised this question, because I myself am a huge Deathspell Omega fan, and I have spent hours and hours attentively listening and assessing the lyrics, and I've done the same with Dodecahedron. So I mean, anyone who has proper brains can comprehend that these two are different bands. So I mean, just because a band is dissonant and they both have complex styles, so it doesn't mean that you have to compare them both. They are different.
No, exactly,
I mean, Deathspell Omega is Deathspell Omega, and Dodecahedron is Dodecahedron. As simple as that.
Thank you very much.
And after touching this topic, I mean, let's move ahead and talk more about the musical influences. I mean, it's apparent that you guys go beyond the black metal realm and take further inspirations from dark electronic, as you just said, and even modern contemporary classical composers, while still being influenced with Vicious, Death Black, and even hardcore music. So the presence of sound synthesis, as you said, that it's what is making the difference. And upon further listens and attentive listens, especially on the headphones on, you can actually make all those intense sound layering, and that's what creates those abysmal, almost cinematic experience, you know. So it's almost like deciphering a painting by Sir Beksinski. No matter how much you try to examine it, it is always able to open newer vistas of understanding. So did you choose to incorporate such soundscapes within the extreme metal dimension to portray something which was not being said, or what was the exact thing? I mean, you just told that sound synthesis was giving a new realm altogether, but was there a more philosophical stance to it?
Well, maybe that's a bit searching too far, because making music, of creating, is all about, you know, emotion, expression, and a gut feeling in a way.
Yeah.
And the music tends to be really cinematographic or paints pictures in a way that
it
are
does.
Like dark, and in the way it is produced and mixed with the layering, and
yeah.
then we have to, transparent, be evil and dark and aggressive at one side, but also the transparency may cause this atmosphere, and you can really listen to it. So it's an album you can really listen once. You have to do it over and over, and you discover
right.
a lot more things, you know, going on in our heads and in our music, actually. So. But we're not. We don't set a goal like from we want to, you know, be philosophical about it. It just, you know, it's creativity flows like a river, and it chooses its own path in a way. So,
mm-hmm.
and then from one track we have to be slow and dark, and one has to be chaotic and fast and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, it just comes how it goes, actually.
Yeah. And then, you know, because the music has this certain cinematic vibe to it,
yeah.
It caused, you know, that Michiel was writing his lyrics, you know, they're not, how do you say that, they're also sort of, you know, descriptions of certain visions, so to say. You could, like,
yeah.
imagine pictures in what he's saying in lyrics, so... I think that also worked because the music was already pointing in that direction, and
Michiel
wrote his lyrics on these songs in that way. So you are very right when you say that it's like comparing it to a certain painting or picture.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll discuss more about this particular thing, because even I have had visions and I want to describe how they were. So moving on, since you just touched the topics of lyrics, well, I am fond of conceptual albums which are able to create new visions, and they have something extra, like something which you can relate to, something which has substance. And Dodecahedron to me is a complete package of what I seek in my music, a combination of aesthetic, art and oral chaos. So the lyrical themes are instrumental in creating these dimensions of horror, as you just said, that the music is definitely pointing in that direction, but the lyrical themes are adding a new dimension, like an added plus to it. So I would like to discuss the lyrical themes and the content which they offer. So let's engage in this in-depth discussion.
All right.
Firstly, the album begins with All Father. And
yeah.
All Father also paints very bizarre pictures and talks about the fall of mankind. And this theme is prevalent in the album, but the way they have been divided in all tracks, they're really overwhelming. So tell me about All Father. What was the reason behind calling this track?
Well, we want to do something omnipotent, and that's really what Dodecahedron is about. We want to incorporate everything. Everything is connected with each other. And if you take humanity as the center of it, because with the arrogance of humanity,
right?
And it's really something. Yeah, it's mind-boggling, actually, to stand on the sideline and see what humanity is capable of, you know, the high art in the Renaissance, but also like concentration camps on the other hand. Is the,
right.
The pureness of art against, you know, the cruelty and that's something which is really appeals to me, that humanity can do both those things, and there are stuff like spiritualism and religions and the search for, you know, the answer and to all of it and failing to find the answer and in that road. And I've All Father is a track, and so is Vanitas, because I wrote them on the same time, actually.
Okay.
It's about a perspective of somebody in a concentration camp, and what you go through when you see those piles of corpses, and if you take that to a higher level, and the transcendence of man into nothingness, actually, and okay. Having a name, bodies having names, and then it's reduced to ashes and stuff like that. It's really when you stop and think about that stuff, I get all these strange images in my head, and I try to portray these images in just short sentences to paint just short movies or a dark picture in a way. So,
right. And talking about vanitas, I think the term is used mostly in European art, which reflects the meaningness or the meaningness or, you know, stuff like that, pessimistic. So you have just described that you were thinking about a concentration camp while writing this track. Mm-hmm. So now it makes all the more sense that why the track is called as vanitas. And if I quote the lyrical themes... Yeah, go ahead.
And if you listen to the opening sound of vanitas, you hear the sluggish sound. It's supposed to be a soldier walking to a mass grave, you know, stepping over the bones and the cracking of it, and you know, the remains of human scum when he's going there. And if you compare that with stuff, what happens still today in the world, you compare that to believing in a god or something like that, and science, on the other hand, and people designing, architects designing factories to destroy people as fast as they can. I think that's humanity failing, and it's interesting to be on the sideline, just seeing that stuff, and like an overview almost. And vanitas is a tradition from the 17th century. Especially Dutch painters were very good at it. Yeah. And it's a still life with a skull and a candle gone out and a book open and a with a rose and stuff like that. And maybe if you take it to another level, the stuff that the cruelty that happens in war or maybe inside of our homes or I don't know, wherever, you can see that as a vanitas too. And the freshness and the energy of life all withers away in the end. So
yes,
if people try to comprehend that, I think, and understand that all life will end and all the actions they undertake, whether it be good or bad, and it will all go away. I think if you have that in your mind, you start to live your life on a different way. I got it tattooed all over my body just to remind me that I'm not getting sucked into stupid things, because everything will end in the end. So enjoy it at the moment, but not too much, etc., etc. So that's one of my personal philosophies, which I put into this lyric for this record. But on the other hand, I try to be, I try to connect with the music as well. So it has to be dark, and it has to be multi-interpretable. What do you call it? Maybe you can see and hear something else in it, but that was the starting point for the writing of vanitas and Allfather.
Exactly. Those are some great words. And as you said, that these lyrics and even the musical themes are open to interpretation. That is the real beauty of art, that everyone should be open to interpretation. Someone could understand it in another way, and someone else could understand it another way.
So I'm not forcing this. Yeah. I'm not forcing this this view on anybody. I just, you know, I try to be a bit poetic about it, and you know, be creative and stuff like that. So,
No, not being. I completely agree with you, and I think this is something which lacks in most of the extreme metal bands, because they're hardly extreme. You know, that's what gripe is.
So, yeah, the thing which bothers me is because we have a lot of critics on our band as well, because we're not pure black metal, et cetera, and we're not satanic. But if you took, you know, like Satanism, it's about being limitless and being about to be free, and they just try to keep their scene so small and elitist, and I think that's not the true way, actually. But
it isn't.
That's an all different discussion in the end. So,
I know.
We had some interviews as well, and we just like, what the fuck is this? Just ask us about the goddamn music, will you please?
Yeah, this is the fallacy of the underground journalism, because the scene is big. And people need entertainment. Only few people need content. So when they see a band which is trying to do something different, they would either like it or they would just try to make it, you know, sound weak or term it as rubbish, especially your typical beer guzzling, leather clad elitists, you know.
Yes. So, that's on the other hand, I like that on the other hand about black metal, especially. Because there are so many different forms and subgenres and total freedom of sound and approach. And when you hear death metal, that's just a little bit more narrow-minded.
I think
black metal has a lot more freedom into it. But, you know, all these subgenres who claim they have, the monopoly of style and blah, blah, blah. I'm really not... I'm not occupied with that at all, because fuck that shit, because in that way, in our creative way, we have a more punk attitude and a DIY, and that's why we want to, although it sounds very complex, but this is what we do, and we control it to the max, and that's why it turned out great, I think.
I completely agree with you, and I support you even more after hearing your fundamentals. And I would say, fuck critics, fuck the fucking scene, just create art. Don't care about anyone else. That's all.
Yeah, definitely. Cheers to that, man.
Yeah. And moving on the lyrical themes ahead. So after the strong discussion about Allfather and Vanitas, I, Chronotrator, is perhaps influenced by the ancient astrology system used by the Greek and Romans, which means ruler of time, I guess. So even those lyrics are very abstract and poetic in nature. And again, they portray a picture of the destruction of man and the establishment of a formless void in which only chaos shall reign.
Yes.
So I would like to know more.
But I think it's you know, this album and also the lyrics and the artwork are about being transparent in a way, but it's also about contrast. And if you take order and chaos, because that's what this one is really about, if you want to create, you have to allow the chaos to take over, and that's what's great about great art. You can get lost in that void, or how Nietzsche called it, it's the steering in the primordial soup, in a way, and Plato described it as the holy fear of getting lost, the track of time and space, in a way. And I think connect that to human life. A religious person, you will eventually turn into that chaos where you came from. So it's about, you know, a clock running around in a way.
Okay.
And the question may be, is there somebody controlling that time, or an upper being? So that's kind of a question mark I put there by those lyrics.
Nice. And they really portray that kind of a picture, especially if you look at the lines like, all our limbs will become a mockery, showing wounds and shame. Man will fade in front of the pillars of chaos. Behold our tired bodies. So these are some great words, and definitely they create great pictures.
We as humans can put up a fight. What we want in the end will all be back to that chaos. We will the earth and be eaten by worms, etc. Right. And our energies get lost, and that's just great. And you have this amount of time in your life and you can do something with it by leaving an album like God of Heaven does. So it kind of makes you immortal. That's what we seek.
Yeah.
In a way, but in the end, our lives, our souls, whatever you want to call it, it will be lost in to great nothingness, the sterling chaos and stuff like that. So
exactly. Yeah. So basically, the lyrics want to portray that the material death is not something to worry about because it's bound to happen. Like it's all about the cyclic destruction and recreation.
It's very cyclic. Yes. Yes. That's one of the main themes. Yes.
All right, makes even more interesting to me now. And now, the next track, Descending Jacob's Ladder, is the most interesting one musically as well as conceptually. And I think the sound synthesis is most prominent on this track because those immense layering, which makes the sound so bizarre, and especially the voices which are coming towards the end. I mean, someone would call them as a robotic or an alien voice, but it's creepy. I mean, it seriously creeped the shit out of me. And I really love that.
That's exactly what we wanted to do. I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting how this track evolved because I was writing. It was the final thing that I was writing for this album, and I had an idea for a sort of requiem, you know, sort of.
Yeah.
That would be the idea, and I recorded something with four voices, but they were actually singing voices, and it was way more classical in a traditional way, and. I was not really happy about that. It was like, we need something like this without, you know, drums and guitars and stuff on the album. Okay. And then, we decided to change that also into a sort of, well, still a sort of, you know, requiem slash poem with three groups of lyrics. But then match it up with the crazy-ass sound synthesis that yours can do. And, you know, that this is the one track that actually worked around. I was like, I totally feel like, this is the idea. I need some, you know, like three verses or something.
Right.
And then just go from there. And during the recording of this album, it was just Michiel in the vocal booth doing the four layers of voices, you know, like the mumbling one and then two screaming ones that are left and right. The whispering one, and they just combined, and based on that, we started. Joris and I started to make these sound layers to it, and it is indeed meant to scare the fuck out of everyone. So if that worked for you, then
mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. Yeah.
It won me, but you know what? I love being scared. That's why I listen to more bizarre music. So it completely compelled me in a sort of a way. I would say that. It was beautiful, but beautiful in a very macabre way.
Okay.
And now, the lyrical themes. Well, Jacob's Ladder is a theme which is predominant in Christianity and Hermetic philosophy and even alchemy. I think it was a symbol of ascension towards the One or the God, which is unknown, but a very incomprehensible way. And even the lyrical ideas on this track are bizarre and still paint pictures of, say, the ghastly foundations of humanity and the failure to achieve the core center, the so-called God in every particular religion. So was that the main aim of naming this track as this, Descending Jacob's Ladder?
Yes, actually you got that spot on, because as man tries to climb the ladder to find the ultimate truth, whether it be in a Christian God or another God, you take a closer look, we're actually, you know, being drifted away from experiencing stuff like God or spiritual stuff. And that's like descending, of course. And what we do is we let out our dark sides and put this horrors on the world and the inevitable woe upon others, and it's all about death and destruction, actually, when you take a look around. But it's logical that we surround ourselves with this destruction and death and images of these terrible things, because in a way it helps us to deal more with our ending, the ending of our lives.
Right.
And I think that's one of the main things that keep men going and doing this stuff to each other all over again, because everybody has this dark sides, because man is kind of a way cancerous and evil and
yes,
and has very two sides to it. And if you acknowledge that, then I think you have to, then you can put out there another perspective on what religion does.
Right.
Spirituality, they all tend to have the answers, and if you live your life by these rules, etc., etc., you can reach the spiritual one or the all-seeing eye and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I think if you accept that, you know, we have this evil source inside of us, that's why we will call order of the source below,
mm-hmm.
I think that has a more realistic view to it. And accepting that, maybe embracing it sometimes,
mm-hmm.
Changes your outlook on the world and all its perils in it.
Right. I agree with that statement again. And as you said, that it's all about reaching that one God whom you would definitely never see because he doesn't exist in the first thing. But
no.
You are completely descending towards an abyss, which is unending. Like, you want to ascend, but ultimately you descend. So this
yes.
is the same thing which you wanted to portray, right?
Yeah, it's like Nietzsche said, you gaze into the abyss gazes into you. And
exactly.
We've been staring into the abyss way too long. So we have become the abyss in a way, I think.
Yeah.
That's a problem with humanity nowadays.
Nowadays, I think it's since time immemorial.
yes, definitely.
All right. And after that very interesting conversation, now, the next thing is the talk regarding the View from Verfell trilogy, which is perhaps another very abstract theme on the album, which is sonically my favorite, because those three tracks are my favorite on the album, and I keep listening to them repeatedly. And they have been able to portray great pictures to me. I would tell you in the interview ahead. But yeah, let's move on to the lyrical themes first. And I think Verfell, according to my research, is it some crater formed after some destruction or what?
Yeah, it's a crater on in the northeast of Iceland.
All right, fine, exactly. That's what I came across. But the lyrical
Michel,
themes...
For the lyrics, Michel, he climbed the crater by himself.
Oh, wow.
And he told me he had this, you know, strange vision and feeling, and I took that for an overview, seeing the religious human trying to struggle and failing miserably in a way. It's like an overview of the world in a way. And I try to describe in my words the feeling he had. And
nice.
We cut that in three pieces, actually.
Yep.
And it started, the undertitle is Head Above the Heavens. And when you're up that high and it has, you know, with this descending the ladder as well, then you go down through the earth, and then you come into the chaos, and then you are being reborn maybe again.
Right.
And then you are like the fertile sperm or spawn maybe, and then you can flow through the earth. When you have that overview, when you've had that overview, then you can put things in perspective and have this complete ID. And that connects to the name of dodecahedron being the fifth element, and in a way, so it's a big thing. Yes.
Yeah, it seems to be. But after you told me that you actually went ahead and you were there at the crater, and then
I can tell you about that, because it was one of the most intense experiences of my whole life thus far.
Yeah, please go ahead. I would love to know about that.
Yeah, I was there. I was traveling around in Iceland.
Okay.
And we were there at 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in July, and the sun doesn't really go, it goes down, but it doesn't turn dark. So there was this really weird light that you don't really, you can't experience it in an area where just the sun goes up and down all the time, you know? Okay. It was just, it's a different kind of light, and we were climbing that crater, and I was just standing there. And there's a lake very close, and other mountains, you know, and swampy areas. And it was just, on the one hand, it was like almost a fairy tale kind of picture. It was so beautiful with clouds around the trees and stuff.
Okay.
Can you still hear me?
Oh, I can, of course.
You there?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because there was, yeah, it showed connection problem, but it's okay now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was there, and on the one hand, you know, I could only stand and look and be silent for 5 minutes. On the one hand, I felt like I was on top of the world. On the other hand, I saw all this, you know, I realized how insignificant human life is if you look at, you know, nature that is being formed 10,000s of years ago.
Right.
You feel very meaningless, and on the other hand, also like you're the top of everything. So that was just a very weird feeling. And so extremely inspiring that I was able to write like 23 minutes of music out of that. the longest piece of music I've ever written so far. And well, just very, very, how do you say it? Very odd and
humbling.
Humbling. And I was just so inspired by that I tried to communicate, like Michiel told you, I tried to communicate this idea, this feeling, and he based his lyrics upon that.
Excellent. And now I'll be very honest, and I would say that I have not been this impressed by anyone's vision in this music since a long time now.
Cool. It's good to hear, man.
Yeah.
Cheers.
No, I'm true, because many bands and many musicians would not really go this whole deal to create a very honest piece of art, which actually comes from your own personal vision, and you want to interpret that in a musical statement. So hats off to you guys.
Everything you hear and read about this band has a meaning somewhere, you know?
Of course, I can very well hear that.
A reason behind it, and that is what I think that makes it significant, you know? That's what gives us the right to exist.
I completely agree with you. I definitely had this vision, but after this intense conversation, I would not really call this as an interview. That would be a very cliched word. This is like, I'm enlightening myself. So thank you.
Good for you, man.
Of course. I always like to learn more. So, you know, it's great to speak with people like you. So that's great. And since you described your great, overwhelming experience, so I think now I can relate with my own visions of how I took this trilogy in my head. So when I listen to Inside...
One tiny other thing, by the way.
Yeah.
This piece sounds a bit different from the other more dissonant parts.
Because, yeah, it does.
The thing is, I try to, and this is just musical stuff, but I try to create an atmosphere, and I think it's best audible in the very beginning and in the very end. You know, something that is at the same time extremely beautiful and extremely horrific. So you can't tell, you can't really say it sounds like beautiful or nice, consonant, or really dissonant. It's neither of those. I try to make an atmosphere with the notes and the choice of notes that creates more of a gray area, you know? And the ending especially is very gray because it's so layered and full. You can hear very, you know, enlightening stuff, but it's also creepy in a way, you know? It's like I tried to create a gray area.
It is, and I can hear that. And I was coming on to this musical topic only. So Inside Omnipotent Chaos is a perfect example of how you just told that you mixed the consonants and the dissonance together. And the merciless hammering of dissonant bleak melodies is very hypnotic. Like, I can listen to Inside Omnipotent Chaos over and over again, specifically for those amazingly hypnotic rhythms. Like, yesterday, I will tell you, when the storm was coming there and I was walking down the street with the headphones on, I was only listening to these three tracks over and over again. And when I saw the storms, the beautiful pallid skyline, and I was getting intense visions. Like, I would feel like painting pictures, what I was imagining after listening to these three tracks. And this is the vision.
Yeah, that should have been a good soundtrack to it.
Yeah. So the experience was that intense. I mean, I think nature and music, they go so well together. If a band or an artist is able to create such visions, that when you gaze at nature or any other great element present in the all surrounding cosmos or the universe. So I think they both really go hand in hand.
It's forces, you know, all around us that you can't control, and you can. The only thing you can do is embrace them, because they will, you know, kill you if they want to, so to say. You know, like with the tsunami, that was just. I was watching that stuff on the television,
right?
And it was just so horrible, and so many people died. And but still, on the other hand, it's very politically incorrect to think like that. But you know, it's like, you know, nature is doing its own thing. It's just keeping stuff in balance, and it's just you know, recognizing or embracing these forces is that was just a way for me to I get inspired by that stuff, so I can write music.
Another point where I agree with you, because nature, the universe, it's cleaning itself, it's purging unwanted elements, and they have all the right to do so. We are nothing, but we are just dust in the scheme of cosmos. So just worrying about what's going to fall ahead, that's stupid.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a vision which I got. And after your descriptions, I think when I listen to the album next, and especially these three tracks, I guess I will be enjoying it tenfold times more. So, and the music, like I said, that it's a great combination of consonants and dissonance. I think that was a great fact. And my favorite part in Inside Omnipotent Chaos is when, after the initial rhythm cease to the ambient interlude, which comes in when you would, you know, you have no idea as to what's coming up ahead. And a few seconds afterwards, your ears will be destroyed with the menacingly heavy breakdowns. And they're like some of the most heaviest shit I've heard. I mean, seriously, I mean, no fucking death metal band can create those heavy slams, I would say. That was intense. So what was the idea? I mean, creating such bizarre sounds, and like a person, if he listens to it, he would not have any inkling in advance as to this monster is coming up ahead.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure about the exact meaning of that part, but it is, of course, an evolving thing. You know, you get some rest in the ambient parts. It's exceptionally consonant in the beginning, you know. Then it starts to creep again, you know, and slumber, and something's coming up ahead. And it's like, yeah, I just need these huge slams there to like, make a point, you know, like footsteps of some horrible being or anything, you know, and then you know, that leading to this next part is a bit Meshuggah-like part, where it's very dwelling and very, you know, dragging you across whatever.
All right.
Just, and it came out of it, like I told you, got inspired by the whole thing in Iceland, and it was a sort of natural development out of the skate, like have these slams there.
Okay, that's great.
Musically interpret my experience on the crater in Iceland into a way where because it was such a combination of total beauty and sheer terror, so to say, this realization that human life is so insignificant compared to nature that has been there for thousands of years, yet it's still so beautiful.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. So I tried to catch that musically with a vibe where you can't really tell if it's, you know, meant to be beautiful or very ugly. So not very consonant and not very dissonant, but in between. So you can create a sort of gray atmosphere where you can't really tell how you feel. At least that was the point of this musical piece. And you know, it's dwelling in between beauty and horror, and that's the way I try to, you know, compose it.
No, you are right again, because the mixture of beauty and horror is certainly present in the View from Verfell trilogy, especially more in the last part, A Traveler of the Seed of the Earth, in which there is a very magnificent interlude in which you have incorporated extremely ambient yet sonically beautiful sounds and absolutely horrific sounding blast beats and other vague structures. And that is a great composition. There are certain parts in this track, especially the middle part of the track, where things go in a very sonic frenzy, where you have incorporated some very nice melodic ambience, but they go along with blistering blast beats and more hammering wake sounds. And that was a great thing for me.
Yeah, that's exactly the point, so to say. It's the combination of both, dwelling in between the, you know, more a little bit more melodic stuff versus the more dark stuff, and it all comes together in the end. You know, if you would look at the layers,
yeah,
of the last part, you know, there's layers. You know, the you can't hear them all because it's just too much. But that's the point. It is
exactly
everything there, and it's very gray. But if you would look at the project file and see all the layers, then you will see all kinds of stuff that you've heard before, layered on top of each other.
Exactly. And what is the lyrical content on the last track significant at all? Because the title is so special, A Traveler of the Seed of the Earth. Like, it can create various images in one's head. So why do you think that this title suited the finale, the grand finale of the View from the Fell series, as well as the entire Dodecahedron album?
Yeah, the problem is, if you have lyrical questions, Michiel should answer them. And he told me that he can answer stuff through email for you if you want. But I'm not really capable of answering that.
All right, that's not a problem. We can get notes from him sometime and I can publish them. Not a problem.
Yeah, and, just email him.
Yeah, and as far as creativity is concerned, I think that I really want to stress on the importance of artistic creativity, especially in metal music, which sadly is still a genre which is usually afraid to experiment because of some unwritten laws, which we were talking about before as well. And I think
that's true, I think.
And traditionalism is important. I'm saying that traditionalism is important, but when it stagnates the creation of newer horizons, I think it's perhaps the most wild thing which could exist. And I think you would agree with this because you have discussed these ideas earlier in the interview again. But now let's just talk completely about the creation, the thing which art needs is the freedom of creation. What is your stance on the view?
I'm sorry, what?
Like, what is your stance on this viewpoint?
Oh, the way I look at music, I don't see music as a separate, you know, thing. It's just, it's for me, it's another expression of art, and that's how I look at it. But you know, I know a lot of musicians who are, you know, look at it differently. Like, they don't see comparisons between, for instance, paintings or movies. And to me, it's all the same. You know, what would make my life, you know, just a little bit relevant is to try to add some, to bring something new to the table, you know, something that adds something to the already existing genres or expressions that are around. And that is of great importance to me. And that is why I try to search for these ways, like I explained before with the sound synthesis and stuff. I would not have released anything like this if I would not be completely sure that I found my niche of you know, expression where we can differentiate from other bands. And it's not different for my other band, Exivius. We try to also find a way of, you know, where we can show that we're just a little bit different. And that is the main point for me, I think, if I'm creating music or if I'm just making music. It needs to be satisfying in a way where I'm, you know, I can be proud of it and can be 100% behind it, because I've played all kinds of styles of music and done all kinds of different projects. And I came to realize that it is it's not significant for me if I play covers or anything. That doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
Because of this aforementioned thing, you know, the search for new ways. That's also why I like to listen to contemporary composers like Ligeti is awesome, and he did some groundbreaking work. He had very strong and fundamental visions on how certain things should sound.
Right.
And he was a very poor man, but still, you know, he never gave in. He never
compromised. He stayed on his artistic search, and he created, in my mind, one of his masterpieces. In my opinion, I mean, one of his masterpieces is Atmospheres, and also Lontano from end of the 60s. It's just so, it speaks to your emotions on such a level, you know. Right. And it has the same kind of dismal atmosphere that I was like, man, this sounds more evil to me than many a black metal bands, you know. So that's why it appeals to me. And I think that there's a bridge could be built between those approaches of composing music and yeah, well, you know, that's what I try to do.
Exactly. And again, you touched a topic which even I have pondered on. As you just said, that Mr. Ligeti's work is sometimes, or not sometimes, it usually is so evil and so dismal that he can even put many metal or black metal bands to shame. So this is what I wanted to know, because I think black metal or any sort of extreme metal still has to explore more realms. Like, you can incorporate various elements. And if you look at these composers or so many artists, like even the avant prog artists like Universe Zero or Magma or these kind of bands, even Shab Niggurath, like when you hear them, they were doing this stuff back in the 70s, and they were so dark, so harrowing. Like, it could definitely give you more darker visions than a black metal band could give you. So it's important to sometimes incorporate these kind of atmospheres and experimental sounds into this style as well, so that you can get more sonic terror. This is what I think.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Great. I mean, this is really commendable. And now, after this intense talk about the music, the lyrics, and the aesthetic, this is a question which must have been bothering you, or say, maybe making you more curious. I mean, this is about the question of live shows. Like, I'm sure that many people would have been extremely curious about watching Dodecahedron in a live setting. But I feel that the music which you have offered is more suited to be enjoyed and assessed in solitude with rapt attention, while understanding the various elements being presented. And also, I think that it will be a very cumbersome task to recreate these sounds in a restrictive live scenario, because you have so many layers, the sound synthesis, and I think it is going to be very difficult to recreate the exact sounds. What do you think about this?
Well, yeah, that's indeed a problem, and one of the reasons you already mentioned. This album was made with the sole purpose of making that album, so to say, and not didn't have the whole live show thing in mind at all, because we were so focused on getting this thing right, because this is what we were working towards to, and that's what we, you know, released. And then, you know, we started to discuss that situation, because of course, if you release an album, there will be people interested, you know, if it's good, people will be interested in, you know, you play a festival or show, right, or whatever. And we had some really, really nice offers of really nice shows and festivals. So we brought up that discussion, and well, we're a bit divided about that, because it would be very difficult. That's one, you know, because we would have to like look into it and how we would put down such a sound and such an atmosphere in a live situation. So there's already some problems there, like things you would have to solve in order to make a live show work. Right. And then again, there's also the aspect of what you mentioned, you know, like the we would not want to compromise either on atmosphere or whatever, and that is what you get when you listen to the album in its entirety, preferably. So there's the practical situations, and also, you know, these things that make you doubt already tell you that it might most probably not a good idea, because it could work, but it will take a huge amount of time, and it will also cost money in order to create such a thing in a live situation. So I was willing to do it, but only if everyone would be 100% convinced that we would be doing that, you know. And that's not the case. So We had to discuss this, and after a really awesome offer from Roadburn Festival, we had to reconsider it. But you know, it's also, this is pretty fundamental. If not everyone is 100% convinced that we should do this, then it's not going to happen, and that was the outcome of the discussion. So it's not happening.
All right, another point where I am satisfied with your opinion, because this is what I was always pondering on, because when you listen to special avant-garde music like this, when there is so much of things involved, just apart from your average guitar, bass, drums and vocals, then you have to be very, very thoughtful if you want to go live, because, you know, you can't, as you said, you can't compromise with many of the atmospheres which are present on the album. Otherwise, there would be no point in going live.
Yeah, you're completely right, but you're also one of the very few people I talk to who seem to fully realize that issue, because people around me, you know, friends are saying like, oh man, you got this offer and this and that, and when are you going to play live? Everyone wants to see it, of course, and I can understand that. But, you know, you understand why. So,
well, thank you. Thanks for the compliment. But yes, I mean, I feel as a creator, if I were in your shoes, this is the thing which will be coming in my mind, that if I have created a masterpiece, like you said that you spent the last 5 years of your life creating this masterpiece, and 5 years are a lot. Yeah, like you could have done anything else, but you were focused and you wanted to create something out of the ordinary, which was something out of the league. So when you think and sit back, and even if you get a great offer from a very established festival like Roadburn, I think a true artist would first of all think that if I would be able to create these sounds or a particular thing in a live setting, only then I should go there. Otherwise, there's no point. I mean, even if you get a great offer and you're not able to do what you have done on the album, then you're going to be fools there, you know?
That's the thing, you know, and it can always be reconsidered depending on what the situation is. But
yeah, of course, it can.
At this point, it was not possible, and you know, being asked by the curators of this year's edition, Voivod, they actually invited us to play. It was such an honor to, and I talked to them at the festival. You know, it was so awesome to you know, be requested by people who have been, you know, they were already around making music when I was born, you know. So there you go. But it was even if we would have if we would have decided to say yes, that was still not enough time, because we got this request in early February, so it would not have worked, because it was also a month touring with my other band. It was just plain impossible.
Yeah, I can understand. Well, I hope that if you get the right opportunities and the right things, like if you are able to solve this matter of creating the atmosphere which came through the sound synthesis, I mean, by whichever means, and it would be a great thing. But I still feel that, I mean, if I would keep myself in this perspective, I would really just want to enjoy this music in a very, in a solitary confinement, where I can just listen to it over and over again and just want to decipher messages. That's all for me.
Yeah, indeed. It's very hard, and for now it's you know, we decided that it's not a good idea. You know, like I said, it can be reconsidered depending on the situation, but don't expect anything soon.
Of course, but if you guys ever get to do a great live show, then are you having a possibility of projections of images or
there certainly should be something a very visual aspect to the show.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
I don't know if it would be projections or whatever, but it's certainly not going to be five guys in sneakers and jeans playing this music, because that would just not add up.
Yeah, exactly. This is not a typical headbangers band anyway, so you definitely need to create more visions, like how a dark ambient or a power electronics show is like.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
All right. And coming back to the sound again. So, like how you said that you guys recorded, mixed everything yourselves, and you guys have put a lot of hard work and energies. You composed all the music yourself, and you took the help of your bassist to learn sound synthesis. And Mikhail's vocals and the lyrics have been a great aspect of telling stories of the album. But I think that the guy who made a lot of difference was your drummer Jasper, because I've heard many drummers in the extreme metal context, and they're great drummers. I mean, they can play very tightly, but I feel that Jasper has brought a great deal of energy, and he has supported the album in an immense way. Especially, I'm very much impressed with the drum production on the album, especially the snare sound. I mean, it's so crunchy, it's like someone is hammering a nail in my head, and it's just immense. So how was the process of writing the drum patterns and to incorporate those bizarre signatures and getting the right deal from Jasper on your guitar and the bass elements?
Well, you know, first off, you're right. Jasper is a one in a million kind of person. He is still very young, but yet he has such a very detailed, developed artistic personality. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he spends a lot of time listening to cymbals. Like, he's constantly trying to find the right sound, and he's also one of those drummers that really approaches his kit in a sound way, so to say. You know, it's not only playing drum beats and patterns; it's also the sound that it gives. You know, and he also recorded a lot of improvisational stuff in between. It was too much to use all of that, but you can hear a bit of it sometimes. You know,
yeah.
Especially Vanitas, you can just listen to that and hear.
Right.
What he does in between, you know, and so that is really important, and that was also one of the reasons I asked him to do this, because I knew that he would be capable of drumming what I was programming on my demos.
Yeah.
Also to add a very cool new flow to the music, because funny fact here.
Yeah.
He had not played a blast beat before he joined us.
Are you going to be kidding me?
Yeah, no, he did not. He's a really good drummer, and he's very wide inspired also, you know, listens to all kinds of different stuff. And that's what usually, especially for drummers, makes them better in metal.
Of course.
Good metal drummers are usually the very top.
Yeah.
It will be better if you have a drummer who is also skilled to do stuff outside of metal, and I asked him to do this, and I was really excited about it. And he's this kind of person, is almost like he can lock himself up in a room for 2 weeks, come out and just do this, you know, like okay, I'm gonna study, and then just like okay. Lock himself up, closed off of the world, and then come out and say, okay, this is what I came up with. And then we had some sessions where he was just playing some stuff, showing off, like, okay, I can do this. What do you think about this? What do you think about this? And we had a lot of discussions about it.
Right.
And he's a guy who he can play a lot of notes, but he tends to do that a lot. So I had to slow him down on some points a bit. That actually worked out really well. Because it was just the collaboration of my vision of the total thing, and his extreme skills made it possible to have this kind of unique thing on the album. And indeed, in the production, we try to focus on getting all those sounds pretty, you know, audible and. And yeah, the snare sound, for instance. Yeah. I'm glad you like it. It was one of the biggest bitches of the production. We had a lot of a hard time getting that thing right,
okay.
But we managed, and we managed to incorporate as little trigger bass drum as possible. You know,
uh-huh.
there's a little layer there just to have it have a constant level. But you know, we didn't want to have a typical trigger sound or anything. It would not match. Fit with the music, so
right.
So we try to keep things as acoustic as possible,
mm-hmm.
Yet still, you know, it should sound, of course, loud and convincing.
Yep.
I also think that we managed to do that pretty well.
Yes, of course. And after all these, discussions, like, how you have been telling me the stories of the creation, I'm getting more and more impressed. Like you told me right now that he did not play a blast beat before joining Dodecahedron, and on the album he hammers like a merciless beast. So
yes, that is because he has such a great developed artistic personality. He can take a certain concept and I'm not familiar with it yet, but it works like this. But if he does it, it's going to sound like it's been played by Yasur, because he has this artistic identity. And it's just a matter of technique in order to get that right. And that's where he's like a crazy dude who just goes in the practice room and makes it work.
That's excellent. I mean, all respect for him. And yes, having an artistic creativity like this, like he is ready to explore beyond his established realm. That's commendable.
Yeah. And he's also capable of listening closely to what happens. He's a person. Uh-huh. He will notice all the details of whatever is going on. So I was listening at some point later on, you know, like 2-3 months after the production of the whole album. And at some point I noticed that he was, it was also in view that he was doing a certain kind of thing with a beat and then, you know, some tom in between that he does in the beginning of view. And he does that again in the first part of the third part of view, in the beginning of the third part. He does a similar kind of thing, which proves to me that he was listening and noticing that this little piece there was similar to the rhythmic stuff in the beginning. So he copy-pasted his concept over there. And, you know, it just shows that he is very keen and on the details and stuff. And he understands what he's doing.
Excellent. I mean, and all those details are very audible in the album, and it makes a lot of sense when you give repeated listens to it. And now after this interview, when I'm going to listen to this album, I'm going to listen to it with at least 100% more admiration and respect. So this all goes out to you guys and for the immense hard work which you have done. Cheers to you guys.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much.
And well, the recording process is very important. I would say it's quintessential for the establishment of a great record. I mean, you could be a great musician, you could have immense compositions, but if the recording and the mixing process isn't done well, then you are in luck of a disaster. So since you guys did everything DIY, so it makes the whole story all the more impressive. So what I want to know is that, do you have a recording studio, or where exactly were everything recorded, especially the drum sound, because it's so perfect?
It works like this. I have just a tiny home setup here at my place. I just work with a computer and an interface and some amps and monitors, and that's where I record my demos. But I'm not really good at mixing or producing, so I just make demos that sound okay enough, when we really started recording, the thing is you need a room for the drums, because you can't record drums at home, not if you live if you live on a farm maybe, but not in the city. So we found a studio in a school in this town, and we were able to record there pretty cheap, and all the rest is done at home, either here or at Joris's place. And Joris is the dude who is good at producing and mixing and mastering. Okay. He also does that for other bands, and he's becoming more and more skilled. And I'm convinced that this project, because it was so deep and intense, and so you know, focused on really detailed ideas, so to say. Like I tried to explain, that was also discussions that we had, tried to explain the kind of guitar sound that I had in mind, and we recorded all kinds of different layers of guitar, and just changing pedal settings and having one layer that is only very top high to add the punch, and then having one layer that is just complete crust sound with two HM2 pedals and a Maxon in order to create, you know, just dirt. And if you, you know, if you try to give each, all these tiny, all these all these layers their own place in the spectrum of what we can hear, then you can come to a good result. But it was really hard because you get phase problems and shit. But
yeah,
we eventually managed to create something that was extremely close to what I had in mind. So that was also really good. But it's all done, you know, here at our homes, except for the drums.
Nice. I mean, that's a great job done, especially by your bassist who did most of the mixing and the mastering. So which softwares does he use to do the post-production on the album?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I'm asking about the softwares which are being used to create the mixing and the mastering process, like the final thing.
The software. Okay. We use Reaper as a sponsor.
Yeah.
Reaper is a really... Now I'm sounding like I'm doing a commercial for them, but Reaper is seriously one of the best audio software things for if you work with Windows. And
I agree. I use Reaper myself.
It's just very simple in its setup. You know, there's no fancy. You know, it's just very to the point, very simple. Right. Also small in size, and it can process a lot of stuff, and it's very easy to use and. That's what we use to record.
Okay. Perfect. And after moving from all the technical, the musical, the lyrical discussions, here is something more personal. And this is the topic of existentialism. I mean, is life a means to explore the infinite mystery surrounding your own creation and the further exploration of it through the medium of, say, art, science, philosophy, etc.? And is it something else? I mean, what, as a musician, as an artist, as an individual, what are some of the goals or some of the core meanings of life which you have assigned for yourself?
Wow, that is a hard question, man. Well, I think I mentioned it briefly earlier, but, you know, if I sit back and think about humanity and, you know, it's progress or regress or whatever you want to, yeah, you can just look at it in all kinds of different ways. I'm just thinking like, yeah, okay, I'm on this planet and I'm gonna die, everybody's gonna die, and what will be left is what you are able to create. If you have
right.
If I at some point in my life I realized that I had a certain musical talent and I was going after it, and I was really supported by my parents to do that.
Nice.
Because otherwise I might not have ended up in this situation where I'm capable of doing what I do now. They supported me in that, and I was able to learn about music and to try stuff and create stuff. And I came to realize that if you really look at the essence, if I had the choice to, you know, either not be able to play guitar anymore or not to compose anymore, then mm-hmm. I would rather, you know, have no hands and not play guitar than have no mind and not be able to compose, because that is where the real value lies for me, is contributing to the already existing art that is out there, and finding my own little space, niche to contribute to something that people can say, hey, this is valuable, you know, I love this, I like to listen to this, or I enjoy this, and... you know, you get that energy back, like right now from you and from other people who respond in reviews, and also on tour with my other band, people who enjoy what I'm doing. And that is what my life, you know, that gives meaning to my life. And that's basically solely why I'm here on this planet, to do this, because that's what I'm capable of doing. So people seem to like what I do. So I am doing this, and that is basically my own real reason to live.
Right.
And it feels good to do that. I'm 10,000 times rather do this than work for some corporate bank or so yeah, that's basically my stand on that.
Great. I'm completely in sync with whatever ideologies you have just described. I mean, especially the final statement that you would rather do something else than being in a corporate bank. That would suck.
I tried. I had to do, of course. I had to do all kinds of jobs, and I did all kinds of different stuff.
But then again, my personality comes around the corner, and I get right. annoyed by situations. I get annoyed by how things are run the wrong way. I'm dissatisfied by how certain processes of life come to exist, and it's just with this stuff I can completely do whatever the fuck I want and even get some recognition for it. So this is what truly makes me happy, and that is why I will continue to do it.
Yes, agreed. And working in a materialistic environment, especially like a corporate sector or a bank, and if an artist like you or any other artist, if he or she works over there, then obviously things are going to piss him or her off because of the whole obnoxious nature of how this works like. Because they, most of the people are just after the money, and yeah. their lives are soulless or motiveless. So an artist definitely needs more creative freedom and atmosphere and environment where he can actually do what he wants to without any restrictions. So that is yeah. where art, you know, it comes ahead, it spreads.
Yeah, that's completely true. I mean, if I would be in such a situation, I completely notice that I don't fit in there. And and I know I felt that a couple of years ago, that I'm really comfortable with like being the watching from the side to like having an overview or be the third person watching everything going on.
Right.
And just I'm like on the sideline and doing my thing and just observing whatever, you know, the fuck is going on. And I really like that position.
Excellent. I'm there with you for making a decision. Like not many people would definitely make a hard decision as this, you know, if because all what matters is conviction. If you have it strong in your head, you know what you have to achieve, then you will do it no matter what the circumstances are. So I can see that conviction in your talks. So that's
why
really
I have so much respect for Mr. Ligeti, because I read a book about his life and his work and stuff, and this man has been going through a lot of shit, man. I'm just a spoiled kid if you compare my life to his life. And he never went away from what he was trying to achieve. And he eventually got some credits, but still, you know, I have so much respect for that.
Yeah.
That it's like trying to get to stay close to that ideal, so to say.
That's perfect. And giving the example of Mr. Ligeti was like great. And especially when it comes to art, like it's a very noticeable fact that many of the artists get recognition once they're dead, which is weird.
Yeah. It's because they're so far ahead of their time. That
exactly.
They create stuff and it's not being seen as valuable during their lives. And then afterwards, they get their recognition. I'm happy to have some recognition while I'm still alive, though. But it just works. You know, the world works 10 times more fast than it did back then. But then still, you know, it just proves how far they were ahead.
Exactly. I am completely there with you again. And well, with this, we would come to an end of this extremely rapturous and great discussion. To call this as an interview would be an insult. So I'm not for this, because this was phenomenal. I got to learn about a lot of things, and personally I'm more satisfied with the fact that I could interact with people like you who are so strong in your head about what you want to achieve, and you are at a level of artistic creation that you really will achieve a lot more success. I mean spiritual success. I mean definitely it's not about the material success at all. So it's really great to have more musicians in the metal genre, and I really wish you all the luck for the future, and I hope that we get more and more masterpieces from Dodecahedron, and in the coming years I'm sure that more and more people would definitely come ahead and appreciate what you guys have been doing. It will take some time because even you are very much ahead of your time, but that's the real charm of it, I guess.
Well, I don't know about that. I just do what I do. It's hard to look at it from a wider perspective, or to say that, you know, I would be ahead of something. I don't know. I just do what I do. But I also want to thank you because you have shown a lot of interest in what we do, and you seem to come very close to you know, understanding what we do. Not that I'm saying it's so complex, but you really seem to get the whole the total of, you know, music experience, visuals, the whole thing, and it's really nice to talk to you.
My pleasure.
And discuss this stuff.
My pleasure. So, guys, this was Jodha Kahid, drawn for you. Perhaps my best, if you want to call this as an interview for you, this was the best interview which I did. So, this will be online very soon, and you guys should check it out.
Okay, right. Just please send me a link if you have it online. I'll publish
of course,
it
I
on
will.
Our Facebook page, and it will be around. And I certainly will, you know, show this to more people. And if anyone ever asks, you know, for, you know, if you want to talk to other artists, or I would certainly recommend you as a conversation partner, because it's indeed more of a conversation than an interview.
As an interview, exactly. I would be very grateful, because your country anyways produces a lot of great artists. So yes, I will be looking forward for more conversations with you ahead in the future, and the other artists which you will recommend me. So take care, man. All the best once again. And
thank you so much.
Let's keep in touch.
Okay, thank you. Goodbye. Have
Bye.
A good night.
Cheers.